Welcome, welcome, guys. We are back for another episode of The Lock-In. I'm David Lappin. I am joined, as usual, by my co-host, Dara O'Kearney. And this week, we come to you from Malta, where we just played the record-breaking Unibet Open and are about to play the Battle of Malta. This episode is dedicated to our great friend, Jan, who passed away a couple of weeks ago and who was meant to be joining us for this very show. Later in this episode, Dara and I will be paying tribute to Jan and sharing fond memories of our time together. But before that, a story of which I know Jan would have had a very strong opinion, and one that has dominated the news cycle since it happened. I am, of course, talking about Robbie Jade Lou's Jack High call on the Hustler stream last Friday. Here on the show, we have thought long and hard whether or not we should cover this topic, and it was a strong opinion of ours that not adding our opinions to the bonfire of conjecture was appropriate. It is, of course, possible that Robbie, in cahoots with somebody else, cheated on the Hustler live stream. But the burden of proof is on the accuser, in this case, Garrett Adelstein, and the people whose job it is to protect the players, in this case, Feldman, Vertucci, and the Hustler stream team. An investigation, an actual investigation, is being carried out, which presumably involves looking into the RFID reader, the vulnerability of the back end of that system to hackers, and whether there is any evidence of foul play that can be garnered. While players and onlookers are, of course, free to speculate, it is wholly appropriate that anybody in the poker media who puts out written material or shows such as this one resist the temptation to weigh in definitively until the completion of the investigation. Simply put, it's a delicate matter when someone's integrity and reputation are on the line, and it's just plain wrong to rush to judgment in the pursuit of attention, clicks, that kind of thing, tempting as it might be. What Dara and I will cover, however, is the public reaction to this alleged cheating scandal, how it has polarised the community, forming different coalitions, actually, to those more usually seen. We will talk about the damage that a story like this is doing as it gets mainstream coverage to poker and its perception in the public writ large. We will also discuss Garrett's behaviour since the Jack High call and whether his reaction has been appropriate, even if it does turn out that Robbie Jade Lou did cheat him. With that, here's a clip from the Unibet Open last Saturday when I was pulled from the tables by our good friend Frank Ubdeward and his casino news team to ask me my thoughts right after it happened. Honestly, actually, my biggest opinion on this, or my biggest take on this, is that people fire off their opinions too quickly. You know, they're going to do an investigation, and they should, because it looks a bit sus. But also, it's a ridiculous thing to do to cheat in that situation, where you basically have 50% equity, and if you do have some sort of vibrating anal beads, whatever is telling you that you have the best hand, it's not the time to use it. So I don't understand it. Like, the first thing you do when you see the hand is you think that's not right, and that looks a bit like it could be cheating. But then when you think about it as cheating, that also makes no sense. So it's going to be one that they look into deeper. And I think the poker community, and will ignore this advice, but they would be well advised to not offer their opinions as much as they do.
You like giving your opinion as well, right? Usually.
Well, when we know more of the facts. I don't think we know the facts of this case. And I think when you're dealing with someone's credibility and their integrity, as you would be with any cheating scandal, it's very dangerous to fire off potentially slanderous opinions right away.
I think I fully agree with you, but the fact that it would be a terrible spot to cheat, that really isn't any evidence that there wasn't any cheating on, because we saw Mike Postle, he played some
great cheating. That's absolutely fair, but also if you even look into that session and a bit earlier in that session, there were spots where Robbie called off with zero equity on rivers, so clearly wasn't getting the vibration or whatever then. So it just seems like it's a very strange situation. And what is certainly plausible as well, as she's a recreational player who made a very questionable play and then maybe was embarrassed, maybe misread her hand. Sometimes people say the wrong thing because they kind of feel embarrassed that they've done something stupid.
No, they might try, I do that all the time.
They might try and justify it by saying something that then seems incriminating as well. So I don't know, I would hold off judgment for a while. Okay, guys, so you heard me there say to Frank Ubdeward how I suspected the poker community may not observe a polite silence on this issue, and it was certainly transpired that they haven't. The issue has literally blown up. It's the only thing you see on Twitter right now. And I just wanted to ask Dara a few questions about, I suppose, the things around it rather than specifically the thing in itself, because as I said, we don't really feel like it's prudent or wise or right to talk about this, you know, potentially slanderous implications for Robbie, who, you know, has not been proven to do anything yet. So, Darragh, just I suppose the first one then is the reputational damage that this story going mainstream. It's basically got so big now, Joey's 12-hour streams multiplied by 3 or 4, that BBC had picked it up. Initially it was tabloids, it was like the Daily Mail had picked it up, and I think USA Today had picked it up, but now it's a story almost in the mainstream, so much so that we're getting a lot of kind of nonsensical commentary from people who don't really understand the game of poker. And I suppose we can just put that to one side for a moment, but the perception of these guys now is cheating, scandal in poker. That's the headline, even though it may not actually be the case. And how damaging is this for us?
I mean, it's definitely not good, but I don't think we need to overstate it either. It's just one piece in the BBC. We don't know how many people read that. We don't know how many people are engaged with the story yet. The sort of smell test on this is that not a single non-poker player has asked me about it yet. And talking to my friend, she sang about this, and he said the same thing as well. So it probably looks bigger to us than it actually is. I don't think this is really having that big of a mainstream impact. On the more general point, I think it's perfectly fine for people to talk about the story. It's obviously a big story, but you do have to sort of be careful in the way that you're doing it. I think it's very, very irresponsible for people to rush to judgment and, you know, go, oh, she's definitely a cheater because of this, this, and this. You are damaging somebody's reputation in a very material way. You're also potentially damaging the reputation of Hustler. I mean, if it turns out that there is no breach and then this is just a baseless accusation. And even, you know, okay, Gareth is the one who leveled the charge, but we have to be careful how we cover Gareth as well. Like, if he genuinely believed in the moment that he was cheated, it's an understandable human reaction as well for him to come out and say that. Even if it was probably very unwise, on mature reflection, he should have, you know, gone about much more privately, much more quietly, and not immediately taken to Twitter as well. But it's understandable. I think any of us in that spot, if we genuinely felt that we were cheated, we might act rashly as well.
Yeah, that was one thing I remember from Doug Polk's video. He said something along the lines of, you got to remember in that moment when you have this sinking feeling in your heart that something has, you know, been very, very disturbing, something potentially or something that at least feels like cheating has occurred, you're not probably in the greatest rational place. I think he stuck around for like one or two hands and then said, like, take my chips. Obviously, then he engaged in some discussion off air with Fertucci and Robbie, and the what happened there, that's all coming out now. There's been two different versions of it. It appears now that Fertucci has more or less, or was it Feldman, I'm not sure who, one of them has more or less said that Robbie's version was more accurate in terms of the offer of the money going back. But to return to Gareth, I suppose, yeah, I don't feel as though his behaviour has been good in this at all, even if it turns out to be the case that he has been cheated, which is obviously awful, and then he's the victim. This is not how you go about catching a cheater. This is not how you go about handling yourself in a situation where this has happened. Obviously, it's fair to say that you're not in your, you know, right frame of mind, but even, you know, now with time having passed, days having passed, it doesn't feel like he's backing down from that position at all. And he's putting someone's reputation on the line. What I keep coming back to is that, like, if you want to come out and speak in favor of Robbie, then you're basically saying somebody who is innocent, who at this very moment in time is innocent
until proven guilty.
Whereas the if you choose the other route and you sort of say this person's a cheater and a liar and a scammer and a whatever, well, then you're blackening that person's name, and if it turns out that they are innocent, you can't take the genie out of the bottle. You know, that, like, what's done is done, and reputationally the damage you've caused is done. So I feel like at this moment in time, if you do have a negative opinion, if you are one of those people who think it's too unlikely she makes this call, it's too unlikely that this happens without assistance of some sort, and it's just suspicious, then I think you need to be really careful in your language of how you express that. Because this is a person's, you know, career on the line, perhaps, or future. But it doesn't work the other way. If you're the person who thinks that she's innocent, then that's fine, because if it turns out she's guilty, you can find that out then and go, oh, now I changed my mind and I see this evidence. you haven't actually damaged anybody.
Yeah, I could agree to that. Like, beyond the sort of this being presented to the mainstream as a cheating accusation, there are other problematic problems with this. It's already starting to divide among down male-female lines, for example. This is being presented as an example of a very privileged male professional poker player acting badly towards a female player, and that obviously sends a terrible message at a time when we're trying to attract more females into the game as well. A lot of feminists who are not poker players that's the sort of tack they're taking. And you know, while I completely understand that Gareth is human and we all get carried away in the moment, part of the job of being a professional poker player is being able to sort of handle yourself better in these spots. You know, we're supposed to take bad beats on the chin. We're supposed to take any sort of adversity that we face at the table on the chin and act in a professional manner. And I think he probably let his standards slip. Now, he unfortunately he has a little bit of previous for this on a previous stream which ended earlier on Hustler, where Paulina Lohliger, also known as Poker Bunny, had quit the game because she was clearly not playing at her best. And then the game subsequently broke. He initially took to Twitter trying to scapegoat her, saying that she broke the game, which was factually not true because the game had gone on afterwards. The real reason the game broke down is that essentially
he stacked everyone
who won all the money. Now, to be fair to again to Gareth, at the time a number of people have called him on that, including the man that this show is devoted to, Jan Sukanek, and Gareth did back down on that occasion and delete his tweet. So I'm hoping that he's been very quiet the last few days. I hope he's got a few days to process and think about, okay, maybe this wasn't the best way to go about it.
Give back the money, maybe.
Maybe give back the money as well, yeah. And hopefully this will blow over. I think it'll be very problematic if he doubles down. It will be very problematic if she is cleared and he doesn't come out and say, hold hands up and say, okay, sorry, I made a mistake, I was wrong. But, you know, I'm sympathetic towards Gareth. A lot of people have a lot of time for Gareth. He's been very open also about his own mental health issues, which I'm very sympathetic towards. So I feel reasonably confident that Gareth will do the right thing once the full facts are known.
Yeah, you touched on something that's also been kind of interesting there, obviously, how this might break down in terms of male-female split. And I'm not sure, obviously, that's where it should go. This is sort of an issue of cheating. You know, Mike Postel got a lot of coverage for his, Bryn Kenny, Aliyim Sirovich, Jake Schindler have got a lot of coverage for their incidents, so I don't think this necessarily falls that way. Although, yes, it's absolutely fair to suggest that, given the nature of some of the coverage, it looks that way. The other way it looks like it's split down at some level, certainly we see pros taking either side. You know, I don't think we could maybe make it a pro-amateur thing, but maybe the type of pro is something interesting. You notice something that maybe like more of the online pros tend to be more siding with Gareth because this just seems like such an illogical hand that it makes no sense. A lot of the people with a lot more live experience are just like, this shit happens all the time in my crazy ass live game. So I'm less likely to think something is amok here. And that's an interesting maybe dichotomy of how it's going. I also thought that there was a certain amount of like maybe the really high stakes people maybe were a bit more detached from that world and there was a tendency for them to maybe lean more towards Gareth's side and maybe give them more mid-stakes grinders who again would have more access to poorer quality play maybe on average in their daily game. Either have seen this before, have seen somebody act that way before. And another really important point in this is that Robbie's behavior in all this in the aftermath is really inconsistent. It's sort of like, I did have a three, no, I didn't have a three, only a jack. I know I meant I did have a three. It's going back and forth. But, you know, yes, that could be suspicious, but that's also the way people behave when they feel like they're under a microscope. She's on TV, she's not an experienced player. She might want to have made a hero call with a three, then realize, oh shit, I don't have a three, then realize her hand was good with a jack, and then thought, actually, I can pretend I'm owning you here now. Didn't realize that the implication of that would be nobody would really try and own someone with a jack in that spot, and then she just get all confused and the story doesn't stay consistent. I think that's just as likely.
Yeah, I think it's more likely, to be honest. I think it's definitely not a smoking gun. If you are going to cheat and you're going to scam, you're going to consider the possibility that you get caught out in advance, and usually scammers have very well prepared stories that they've rehearsed. I think the inconsistency actually points more towards innocence than guilt. My wife was an interpreter for asylum seekers in Ireland, And she said that the people who genuinely were, you know, fleeing horrible things in their own country or whatever, their story tended to change because they were remembering things, they were misremembering things. If you talk to them now, you got a slightly different story in a few months. Whereas the people who were essentially gaming the system, scamming the system, had impeccably prepared stories word for word because they had their story ready, they had it rehearsed. And I think that's probably, as I said, it's probably more pointing towards innocence than guilt. But again, we don't want to go down into the road of prejudging all this. We are literally just looking at from the outside as everybody else is. But I would just say that to the people who say, oh, that definitely means she's guilty, clearly it doesn't.
Yeah, and while obviously we said we weren't really going to get into the nuts and bolts of it, and we probably are somewhat now, I think it's only in the context of what we've seen by the response. It's only as a reaction to that, and I suppose with the caveat that, like, if you are leaning on the open-mindedness and the we don't know all the facts now, well, then it's probably perfectly fine to express that opinion. The dangerous opinion to express right now is the one where you throw her under the bus with not enough information to go on, and that's what's potentially slanderous and damaging. And, you know, obviously more will come out soon. As I think we all know, there's an investigation taking place. They're going to be looking into the RFID. They're going to be looking into maybe, I don't know, I'm not great on technology, but possibly there's a signature left behind when you hack into a system of that nature, when you know, claw that information off what's supposed to be a closed system. Maybe people have to be physically close by, so maybe the fact that it's in a casino means somebody might be on tape not too far away in a control room, on an adjacent table outside that sort of glassed off area. I don't know, but you know, that's what they're doing. And in fairness to Hustler, they've been fairly transparent about saying, look, we have a third party doing this, and when they come to their findings, we'll release it, even if it's bad news for us. In the meantime, they are continuing with their streams, which some people have suggested they shouldn't. If there's a plausible accusation for cheating, maybe it means you're compromised already and you need to back off doing streams of this nature. But like you said, Dara, there's no, other than Garrett's problem and the suspiciousness of the hand in itself, there's no evidence yet, so why should they stop doing it? I guess Garrett and Robbie not playing means that the people involved are not playing right now, and that's enough.
There's no real evidence. That's the issue. It is just one man's accusation, and obviously he's a very bright man and it has to be taken seriously. But at the same time, one guy thinking that the game was rigged or cheat. I mean, online sites every day get hundreds of emails claiming that their site is rigged. Do they have to shut down the site and investigate them all, or do they just say, well, look, until we get an actual credible accusation with more evidence than just you think it's rigged, we're not going. Like, I don't blame Hustler for keeping going. I think they have to make a business decision how likely it is that there was foul play. I think if they thought there was a significant chance that this was suspect, they would already have shut the stream.
Yeah.
But I think they think it's probably a pretty remote possibility that there actually was cheating involved here.
Indeed. Well, we are going to cover some more stories from a different location. This is going to be an attempt by Dara and I. I hope you forgive the sounds of the waves in the background. That's the kind of sounds that you get in those meditation tapes. It's probably quite pleasant, probably nicer than my screechy voice anyway. But we're going to go to another part of Malta now, another maybe scenic spot on the island for the next segment. Okay, so we found another spot, almost in the ocean here now, Dara. I don't know, are you happy with the places that your reconnoitre guy has chosen?
Tide might be coming in. This might be a very short segment.
We'll do it quickly. What we basically want to talk about in this segment was the Unibet Open. We had a fantastic Unibet Open, record-breaking field, loads in the prize pool, 75k up top, and we got to do a bit of commentary on it. The whole festival was great. Great to see our regulars at Unibet again. Obviously, we've missed them very, very much. It's been far too long, 31 months out of action, but a triumph, Dara.
It was indeed a triumph, yeah. It was very interesting final table because we had 9 different nationalities on the final table, which kind of makes the point that Unibet Open pulls people from everywhere. Not just all over Europe, we had one American on the final table. The Irishman was a student of mine, Ray Wheatley, shout out to Ray. But, you know, as far as we were concerned, I think maybe the real main event was the Chipperas Mystery Bounty.
Well, yes, of course. We'd actually made a sort of an attempt to rename the main event, the 1100, and have everyone talk about how the Chip Race 550 was actually the main event. Joking aside, it was a huge success. 244 runners. That was about 20 or 30 more than we expected. There seemed to be a real appetite and appeal for the event when the time came.
550, 250 in the prize pool, 250 in the bounty pool, and from that bounty pool we generated a whopping 10k mystery bounty, which was won by a man, I'm going to call him Ericsson. I think his surname was Ericsson. I hope I got that right.
Excellent research as usual.
My favourite one though, I have to say, he won the second most important bounty. We had a 10k one and a 5k one. It was Paul the Rock Romaine, the last bounty pulled the night before. So there was a little bit of bounty action for one session of poker before they went into day two. Then day two, the big one was claimed and the final table and all that happened. But Paul pulled a 5k bounty and he seemed really emotional actually. But he was almost like shook off his feet. There's a video out there. I might even include it in this clip here.
Yeah, Kat was great. It was almost like Carry On Mystery Bounty, I think, in terms of her commentary, but she really added to the occasion. Mystery Bounty was great fun. I was also very happy personally to see the use of the tombola. I've been calling for the tombola as the best method to do the Mystery Bounty. It's the most transparent.
Team Tombola. Yeah, no, it was great fun, and we're going to have another one of these at the upcoming IPO. We're delighted about that. It's going to be a 230 quid event, so a little bit smaller, but we expect a bigger field again. I think that's going to be maybe the second biggest event at the IPO. Don't worry, those waves do seem to be getting a little bit close. We're really looking forward to that one. It's at the end of this month with Nick O'Hara, obviously, as our partner, Unibet, sponsoring the IPO for the last few years. It's been a great success. We hope the Mystery Bounty will bring another element of fun. We're going to add money to that one, too. Unibet added, I think in the end, around $8,000 in value to the one we just had here, which was great. Players won tickets. They won Upswing €1,000 vouchers. There was, I think they had to win at least 50 quid. So there's like 50 quid bonus prizes going to everyone. And then we're going to try and do something very similar at the IPO. Don't know how much we'll give away yet. I'm going to guess it's going to be like $3,000 or $4,000. So some nice money added there to that one when the time comes. Looking forward to that. Any other memories, Dara, from the Unibet Open? I sort of took away from it maybe just the experience of seeing everyone again has been the most important part for me. I think, you know, even though everyone's sort of on the poker circuit together and sometimes we do see guys around, Unibet tend to have that maybe clientele that only play Unibet stuff, so they haven't actually played live in a long time.
Yeah, it was great to catch up with a lot of old faces. Unibet Opens in the past have always sort of drawn the same crowd over and over again, but this one was interesting because I would say I at least half the faces look new. I think a lot of people either came back to poker during the pandemic or maybe started again or started for the first time. So it seemed a younger crowd than usual as well. Also, quite a few people came up to me to say how much they'd gotten out of the various books that I've written. That's always very nice when people take the trouble to do that in person.
That's the best way to, you know, ingratiate yourself with Dara. If you just come up and compliment him on the books.
Forget about the chip raise. I don't care about the chip raise anymore. But the books. Tell me you like the books.
If you mention the books, he's your friend forever. Shout out to Monica Vaca, who went back to back. 31 months apart, back to back in Queen Rules ladies events. Although I don't think they played Queen Rules this time around. But anyway, it's the spirit of the Queen is the important part, not the actual changing of the rules, perhaps. And of course, speaking of Queen's Rules, the Queen of Unibet live events. What a great segue, Natalie Sobacco-Peru, who is a one-woman show these days. Yeah. She gets lots of help from the team, but really, when it comes to the live events, she's doing it all herself. And she was fantastic, obviously, getting all those people, record numbers, into the Casino Malta. And I want to give personal shout outs to Andy Payton, who was tremendous help all week long. Cal Arnsby, who we've mentioned, of course, as well. But pretty much all hands on deck, everyone really, like, you know, putting in the effort to make it a special event for our players. And I think the feedback has been great so far. So we're delighted about that. We mentioned investigations there a few minutes ago. That was obviously in the last segment. We are carrying out an investigation of our own right now, guys. I just want to say that this one's very important. Maybe more important, in fact. We need to investigate what's happening to Dara's waistline, because hashtag joke diet is trending right now. Wow. Can you explain what's happening, Dara? Some people do keto diet, some people do, you know, calorie deprivation diet, some people fast, but what is the joke diet?
Well, this is I guess you could call this the accidental diet. Essentially, I flew from Dublin to Malta. I just had breakfast. I got here very late, too late to eat, so I just went straight to bed. Got up the next morning, had a modest breakfast. Then we went to the Unibet offices for a meeting about the new schedule, and we just had a very small dinner because I wasn't sure whether we were going to eat again. So I said, okay, well, I'll just have a small dinner. Actually, I went back to the hotel, fell asleep, passed out. So now I woke up the next morning and actually missed breakfast and thought, this is pretty good. I've had very little calories the last 2 days. This is almost a diet now. So I pretty much committed to it. I skipped breakfast that day, just had dinner. And since then I've been, it's a very, very simple method that I'm using. It's just a little bit of everything. I'm not starving myself, but I'm not eating very much, but I'm eating small amounts of everything, so I hope that I'm covering myself for all the basic nutrients.
There you have it, guys. A little bit of everything, that's the DOAC diet. No mention there, I want to point out, just in case anyone thinks about going on the DOAC diet, that you have to also be an ultra runner running miles and miles every day. I think that might have something to do with the weight loss as well. He's been bragging about 5 kilos and then there was a six kilo came off yesterday. I'm not sure what happened there. He's using my Winnie the Pooh weighing scales in my house, so I'm not sure how reliable it is, to be honest.
But it does say that you're 94, so it's probably in the right ballpark.
It doesn't say I'm 94, but do you know what it is, guys? I'm going to explain it. I broke my toe recently. Nobody gives me any sympathy for my toe. But Monica Vaca decided that she had a broken leg, which turned out to be nothing wrong with her at all. She was hobbling around the place with no sign of action. I actually broke and dislocated a toe. So this is my toe weight. If anyone's just wondering what's going on here with my belly, this is broken toe weight. O'Carney, joke diet. This is him. Look at that. Look at that slender. Look at that svelte. Look at this. What specimens we really are. Okay, do you know what? I'm pretty sure we're about to get saturated. That's why we stood up there, guys. The waves are getting a little bit nasty. So we're going to head indoors for the final segment, which is, of course, the most important segment of this show.
So for the final part of this episode, obviously, it was pretty obvious from the title and from the poster we put out. This is a tribute episode to our friend Jan Suchanek, who sadly passed away a couple of weeks ago. Dara and I have known Jan for quite a few years now. Dara knows him a little longer than I. They became friends in a humorous enough way. I want to come to that now in a moment. But we were absolutely gobsmacked by the news. Jan was the most fervent poster in one particular WhatsApp group that we share. And when he didn't post for a day or two, it was definitely out of character, and we were a little bit worried at that point. But because we're shitty people and love to take the piss, we renamed the group RIP Jan, which ended up being very dark indeed in the end, because a few days later we found out that he had indeed passed away, having actually jumped into that group for one final few words to us all. When he did wake up at one point from his coma and spoke to us just to say that he was in the hospital and that he would be he would tell us more later. Sadly, he never had that opportunity, and we found out from his wife Tatiana what had happened. But Dara, I suppose start at the beginning. Jan obviously made an impression, first off. I guess he came into our world and your world specifically because of maybe one of our more famous public arguments we had.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's appropriate since Jan really did love his arguments, but it was around the time that we you initially wrote a blog criticising a Daniel Negreanu blog, and then you suggested that I do the same. I was in Australia at the time with the Aussie Millions. Didn't really want to get involved, but I decided, having read your blog, I realised I could come at it from a different angle. So I wrote a blog which went viral, largely through the use of the blackface image of Daniel as the as the thumbnail. Jan absolutely loved the blog, but the whole thing obviously blew up on Twitter, and I was waking up every morning in Australia to 300 or 400 notifications, and people were arguing back and forth, actually, mostly on our side, I have to say. But over time, I started to notice there was one guy who seemed particularly both ferocious in his opinions, but also very well reasoned and intelligent, and that was Jan Suchanek, Perpetual Czech, as he called himself on Twitter. And I imagined him as a sort of a young, fiery online kid, with very strong opinions, very well educated, So when he sent me a message saying he wanted to meet up, I thought, yeah, that sounds great. And we arranged to meet at a break. I got out of the room very quickly. I was waiting, looking to see like which of the young guys was going to be this Jan Sukanek. And then this guy about my age, very tall man wearing a sports top, looking vaguely homeless, kind of arrived. And he kind of circled around eyeing me for a while. And then we both kind of figured maybe we were the person we were looking for. So he came over and he asked if I was Dara, and that was our first ever meeting. We bonded pretty much instantly. We went from there to like talking nonstop. He invited me to a Super Bowl party that he had. Brought my wife very reluctantly there. She doesn't really like hanging around with poker people, but she absolutely loved it because Jan was an incredibly charming host, and he was staying in the penthouse as well, and it was champagne and caviar. It was a real baller affair. That was the first inclination I had that Jan was incredibly successful financially. He really wasn't the kind of guy that bragged about what he did or would give you that impression, to the point that when we met him a few years later, he came along with me at a dinner break and we went to meet my wife and her brother Jean-Yves. And Jan, as was his wont, he was a very generous man. He paid for the whole meal despite our protests. And after he left, Jean-Yves lectured myself and my wife on letting this poor man who looked homeless and clearly could barely afford to feed himself, let alone all four of us pay for the dinner, which was quite ironic because Jan was basically on his way back to try and find the high stakes cash game he could jump into. Jan loved playing all stake levels. He would play for any amount, but he particularly enjoyed the high stakes, and he was a winning player at that level, even though he wasn't a full-time player. He was a very, very intuitive player, let's say.
He sure was. I particularly love that story because I know how difficult it is to get on Mrs. Doak's good side. I sometimes manage it, but not always. I know Jan was one of her favourites, if not her favourite, of Dara's poker gang. And I've been really struggling actually the last few weeks just with the idea of where to place a passing of this nature, because I only met Jan once in person. We met a few times on that trip, but and actually in my head it was twice. I've been telling people it was twice for most of the last week or two, but actually when I dug deep into it, it's actually just the one time. But the reason for that is because when people become such a big part of your life, mediated through WhatsApp groups, and Jan was very active, you know, he was always chatting away in your own group with them, in different groups you had. So that person just becomes such a big part of your life. You get to know them really, really well. Dara, you knew Jan better than any of us, and I know you had a particularly special bond. But I've still been struggling with that idea of, like, where do you place a passing like that? Obviously, if it's friends or family who you've known since you were young, you've all the shared experience of doing things physically together, you have places in mind or whatever. I kept coming back to moments where I'd been talking to him, but it was like a moment that I'm walking down the street here in Malta, or it's a moment when I've, you know, at the airport, and and that conversation is placed in that place for me, even though he wasn't physically there, he was very much there. And I think that's sort of what a lot of people have these days in terms of their relationship. The world's got smaller in a way and more interconnected because we can have these chat groups. But then maybe in these awful moments when you lose somebody who you mostly know in that realm, it becomes a little harder to know where to place them. And I almost felt unworthy of my sad feelings for him because I had only met him the once. And I was so much looking forward to his visit here to us in Malta. He was actually on the way over. He was supposed to be on this very episode sitting between us. I don't know how he would have fit him in. He's a tall man. He would have had to angle the camera differently. But he was going to be here and he was probably going to fire off some fiery takes. I imagine he would have had strong views on the stories of the day today. And we had a boat. Well, he had a boat trip planned. Dara and I both got seasick, so we were trying to get out of the boat trip. But we had lots of dinner plans. And just like devastated by the news and really feel like there's something missing there, but also felt like maybe that experience was something people could understand these days, because maybe they have relationships a bit like that are mostly online relationships, I guess, but they're no less friendships, they're no less powerful, I think.
Yeah, I agree completely. I was surprised by the depth of my feeling because, you know, I hadn't met him all that more often than you in person, but he was the first person I spoke to every morning, last person I spoke to every night. It affected me more than my own father's passing did, for example. Yeah, we definitely live in an era where those sorts of relationships actually feel closer than people we're related to or people we see every day.
Yeah, one other story I want to share is one that we've actually sort of probably told at different points. Maybe it's come up a couple of times on the show over the year, but it's worth repeating. On our first and only trip with him in Vegas, where he was usually just like at the hot dog stand at the break. You always knew where to find him if your brakes were syncing up, because he would beeline for one of those ghastly, poisonous hot dogs. You'd hang out there. But we did get a few nights out, and one of them, we went to the Palms Hotel. We were leaving with Jennifer Shahadi, who was staying in Pam's place, which was on the same road as the Gold Coast where Darren and I always went. And he wanted to go somewhere fancier because, you know, that's the world he lived in. But we were like, no, we're going to Pam's. You can join us, though. He said, OK, yeah, fine, I'll join you. Again, just no offence, Jan, your dress sense was atrocious. And that's from two really awful, you know, fashion disasters, saying it here.
You made us look good, basically.
He did make us look good. And we joined Jen in that bar that has the famous shark in formaldehyde.
Damien Hirst.
The Damien Hirst, exactly. And we sat there with Jen, who met him for the first time. We had such a fun night, gin and tonics and cocktails. And, you know, as was always the way, it went into very philosophical territory, but it was also like the right amount of salacious and scandal and what's going on too. We had a fantastic night. And the issues around a certain Jonathan Little were very much in our recent past at that point. And the hashtag Team Lowlife was probably more alive than it ever was before. Yeah. And we were mocking Jan because we were, as I said, we're shitty people. And we were taking the piss out of him being in that nice venue with his awful clothes. Also, Jennifer Shaddy, always a bit of a fashionista. So, like, we all, per her, Jennifer sitting there in really nice clothes, and then we're the best of the three. He was fairly disheveled, and we were mocking him for his homeless look and whatever it was. And then as we got to leave, Jennifer was going left, we were going right, we were going out onto the street, and he whizzed by us in a...
He whizzed by us, like he didn't whiz.
He whizzed by us in a limo that he pulled down the window to scream at us, see you later, lowlifes!
Yeah.
Because, you know, he had to get the last word, obviously.
Jan, yeah.
But look, we have a few tributes have come in, some friends of Jan from the sports betting world, which was obviously his main world when it came to the things he was successful at. But also we have some other tributes from people who knew Jan more on a personal level too. I'm going to start off actually with a sort of a group message, which came from, I'll name all the people at the end, but the message comes in. Someone in our group once inadvertently entered the wrong input, and we managed to get on one of our biggest bets ever on the completely wrong side. You see, these degenerate gamblers, except they're pro gamblers. Internally, we all panicked and we were shocked when Jan just chimes into the chat box with a photo of another bet ticket. He had just wagered another $2,000 from his own personal betting account. At this point, it's fair to say there was $100,000 on this bet anyway. Remember, it's on the wrong outcome. And he accompanied his photograph of the bet slip with the quote, "Fuck it, it's still allowed to win." He enriched the lives of those he touched, few more so than the group of 10 others in this gambling squad that are now missing a brother in arms, an invaluably sharp mind and a true leader. His generosity, intellect and positivity made him transcendent, while his humility kept him genuine and human. He loved to argue, which we know well, but not out of the stubborn willingness to be right, but to seek the truth, and every conversation brought you closer. The world is a duller place without him in it, and we will miss him and love him for the rest of our lives. That's from Dane, Hank, Zim, Wes, Punter, CV, Eel, Jada, Liam, and Gassman.
Yeah, lovely message. That very much gels with my experience of Jan, too. No matter what went wrong, it was all fine.
It was just life, like, is good. Oh, well.
Oh, well, shit happens. This message comes in from Billy the Croc, Australian poker legend. Said, "I met Jan many, many years ago in India in a place called Goa on a magnificent resort with his wife, who was pregnant with their first and only child at the time. Jan wasn't the boisterous individual that he became as years progressed, but he loved to play poker, and after playing with him and against him across the globe, I can honestly say that Jan absolutely loved the game. It didn't matter the stakes, it didn't matter the size, he just loved to play and socialise. Jan will be sadly missed, his enthusiasm and his character across the table will never be forgotten. We had many great times at the World Series in Vegas, in San Remo, in Monte Carlo, and also in New Caledonia, Noumea. As people, Jan and his wife Tatjana would always be great for the game, win or lose. Tatjana would always be known as the tight one, but Jan would always be known as the loose goose. Whether the buy-in was $100 or $50,000. Jan just loved to play, and he would be sadly missed. Rest in peace.
That's a lovely message from Billy the Croc there. Yeah, look, I think that was it as well. Like, it never really mattered how much it was, or he was a great man for the, you know, when you were selling action or whatever, he'd just go, how much do you want me to buy? He was like, is there other people you want to sell to so that they have a piece? Because he didn't want to deprive them of the sweat either, but he was also willing to buy all if you wanted to. Yeah. It was that kind of vibe.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
There's another message here from a former guest actually of the Chip Race, good pal of ours as well, and a really good pal of Jan's. It's Rob Campbell. He said, he sent in a story, okay? Maybe I don't think I can act.
Very heavily edited. Sorry, Rob, but we would have absolutely got cancelled if we went with your version.
Exactly. So it was a story about a time when Jan and Rob were three-handed in an Aussie Millions tourney back in 2013. Unfortunately, I'm not going to play the audio. Rob sent me the audio for fear of cancelling. Also because I'm a Luddite and I wouldn't know how to change the files around. But the gist of the story is the two of them didn't know the third player three-handed, but didn't think much of his play, it's fair to say. They were mocking him. They were mocking the way he was putting the chips in. They reckoned him to be a bit of a fish, and they were patronising him both to his face and off the tables whenever there was a break. They also had the audacity to inquire if he was a new player, cheekily going as far as to ask if it was his first time playing, I think. The third guy eventually did bust in third, and then Rob beat Jan heads up, which I'm pretty sure is the only reason Rob wanted to tell this story. Later that year, the third place finisher won the Poker Players Championship. His name is Matthew Ashton, and he is widely regarded to be one of, if not the greatest ever player to play mixed games. To quote Rob, just shows what us pair of bananas knew.
Yeah, classic guy indeed. The final one we have is from Paulina Lulliger, better known as Poker Bunny in some circles. I actually introduced Paulina and Jan, and then I got to rail one of the feistiest, but also one of the sweetest sort of father-daughter relationships. They both absolutely loved to argue, and Jan loved how much feistiness there was in Paulina, I'd say. So, Paulina writes, Jan was like a real father to me. He was always caring and empathetic to me, even when I fucked up. He relentlessly saw the best in people. His kindness towards me changed the course of my life, and I hope that one day I can make him proud.
Well, on that note, I think that says more than anything else. The kindness and compassion of the man. He was a horrendously nagging arguer who wouldn't give an inch on anything he ever believed. He had some questionable taste in literature. He had some questionable taste in authors. But he would fight his side of things, and he would never hold it against you when you completely disagreed with him, and it would never resort to anything other than an academic argument of ideas there. And as Paulina's beautiful words there testify, when it came to being a softer person, when it came to kind of showing a bit of kindness and a bit of compassion with someone who needed this in their lives at crucial points, someone who was under fire many times and fucked up in her own words, but also, you know, everyone deserves second chances and maybe more chances than that. He was obviously someone much like yourself, Dara, who, you know, were very thoughtful and empathetic and just understood that the world isn't viewed by everyone through the same lens or even experienced by people the same way, that we're all different personalities. And I think that's one of his lasting things, is that he was just so not judgmental about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, it's been an emotional last segment, as we knew it would. It's why we did it last, because at least we can go off now, not a dry eye in the house, and reminisce about him during this day. I hope you guys will too, if you knew him. And if you didn't know him, well, hard luck, because he was great, and his memory will live on. On that note, guys, we will be back for another episode, I'm sure, in the very near future. Take care, everyone.